Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be Robert F. Kennedy, Attorney General of the United States. We'll bring you today's program in a moment.
This is David Wayne, your Saturday morning host on Monitor. If you're planning a going places, doing things vacation away from home, you'll probably be tuning in many new radio stations around the country. But wherever you go, you can still hear your favorite NBC programs, Monitor on weekends, Emphasis, and News on the hour during the week. All you need to know is where to locate other NBC stations. And for that, we've got a handy postcard which will fit easily in the glove compartment of your car. It tells you where to set your dial for any NBC station, no matter which state you're in. We'll send it to you free. Write postcard, NBC, Box 666, New York, 46.
A scrap of paper is tossed from a car window. A cardboard carton lands beside it. A third bit of litter, a tin can, drops with a clunk. One by one, the little bits grow, and every little bit hurts. Hurts the beauty of America. Carelessness, thoughtlessness, these are the underlying reasons for the overwhelming mess that litters the American scene. So think before you throw and put every litter bit into your car litter bag. That's how you can always help keep America clean and beautiful. And now, Meet the Press. Today's guest, Robert F. Kennedy, Attorney General of the United States. He has played a key role in the formulation of President Kennedy's proposals for civil rights legislation. Our panel consists of Lawrence E. Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Ted Poston of the New York Post, James Kilpatrick of the Richmond, Virginia News Leader, and Herbert Kaplow of NBC News. Ned Brooks is our moderator.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Robert F. Kennedy. He has played a key role in the formulation of President Kennedy's sweeping proposals for civil rights legislation, which were sent to Congress during this past week. We'll start the questions now with Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Kennedy, the country is being told that there is a danger of violence, even of revolution, if the Negro's demands for equality of opportunity are not met. Do you see the situation as serious as that?
Well, I think that it is serious, Mr. Spivak. I think that the injustices have existed for a long period of time. I think that the Negroes feel that it's unacceptable that the situation should continue. I think this is supported by the vast majority of American people. So I think that the time has come to take some remedial steps. The federal government, the state governments, the local governments, and individuals in their relationship with other individuals to rectify the situation.
Well, do you think then that if the president's civil rights proposals are not enacted, we're headed for a real racial explosion?
Well, I think we're in for great difficulty. I think that the legislation that the president has suggested will be extremely helpful in alleviating some of these problems. I think even if that is enacted, I think that this difficulty and trouble is still going to be with us because we have not met our responsibilities for a long period of time. We are paying for it now. And although the legislation, I think, will be a major step forward, I think we will still have troubles because of unemployment amongst Negroes, lack of education, lack of skills. And I think that a great deal needs to be done in this field as well as in the field in the category of civil rights.
Now, from your talk with Negro leaders, do you think that they are going to be satisfied to any large degree if these civil rights laws are enacted? Or do you think they just consider this a beginning?
Well, I think that Negro leaders and, as I say, the vast majority of American people want Negroes and all of our citizens treated equally now. I think that the civil rights legislation is a step forward. But I think until we have fair education standards for all of our citizens, fair housing, until major steps are taken in some of our northern cities to deal with this problem, I think there has been too much attention by Northerners on the problems of Birmingham or Montgomery or Savannah or any other city in the South. I think that there are a lot of problems in the North that need immediate attention. And I think until some of those problems are alleviated, I think we're going to have troubles and difficulties in the country.
Mr. Kennedy, according to reports, Negro leaders are planning a march on Washington with possibly 100,000 demonstrators. Do you think such a march is going to help get those civil rights, that civil right legislation through, or do you think it's going to hurt?
Well, I think until Congress has had an opportunity to consider this legislation, serious legislation, and there are arguments that should be made and should be heard in connection with the legislation. It's further than its legislation in this field than it's ever been enacted before. So I think that it should be discussed, and I don't think it should be discussed under a aura of pressure. And so I think that perhaps the announcement of such a march is premature. I think if there is a right to petition, and there is a right of Negroes as well as others to make their views known. And it might come to a point where they feel that the legislation would not be enacted until it's shown that this legislation is wanted by a large percentage of American people. And they will perhaps have to take some steps to make sure that that is understood. But I certainly think that at the present time, that Congress should have the right to debate, discuss this legislation without this kind of pressure.
Now, you've spoken pretty forcefully on the rights of the American Negro today. What do you see as his responsibilities today?
Well, I've spoken also frequently on that. I think that they have a responsibility to not only to Negroes, but to white people and to the United States. I think we can make great progress in this field. I think that the progress that is required and necessary will be made only if whites and Negroes join together to make that progress. If Negroes, under pressure, get the idea that the only way to have steps taken is to act the role of the bully, and that as at least one Negro has said, leader has said, that they have the white man on the run now, let's keep him on the run. I don't think that kind of attitude will remedy the situation. I think whites and Negroes working together is what is needed at the present time. So I think that Negro leaders have a major responsibility.
Now, there are some Negro leaders who believe that because of the past treatment, Negroes are now entitled to special treatment. Do you think that the Negro is entitled to special treatment because of past discrimination against him?
What I think is that he's entitled to special attention to try to remedy the sins of the past. I think that we have to focus a good deal of attention, those of us in positions of responsibility and the individual citizen, on this problem. But I don't think that an individual should be hired just because he is a Negro. But on the other hand, I think Negroes are not qualified for certain positions of skill because they have been discriminated against in the past. So I think we should make an extra effort to make sure that that problem has been remedied, that we do more for vocational training, that we do more for education, that we see that they then are entitled to the same privileges that the white person is entitled to.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Kilpatrick.
Mr. Kennedy, following up the last question, sir, Congressman Alger said recently in the House that the Dallas Post Office Workers Union had complained to him that in the filling of three supervisory positions in the United States Post Office there, Negroes deliberately had been jumped on the promotion list simply because they were Negroes. One of them had reportedly ranked number 54 on a register of 400 employees, and the other two were farther down. Do you approve of such promotions by reason of race?
Well, I haven't examined in the facts in that particular case. I don't think that the individual should be given a particular position because he happens to be a Negro, nor do I think he should be discriminated against because he happens to be a Negro. I think you'd have to look also into the background of whether Negroes have been discriminated against in years gone by, and therefore that the promotions of Negroes to positions of responsibility have not come along as fast as they might otherwise have. So I think that the whole situation must be examined. I don't know the particular facts there.
In the Department of Justice, are you now hiring Negroes because they are Negroes for particular spots?
No, we are not, and I've said that publicly. We are making an effort, however, to make sure that Negroes understand that they are welcome for employment, that they're not going to be discriminated against. When I became Attorney General, there was only a handful of Negroes. We've gone out to the law schools, and we've said Negroes are welcome at the Department of Justice. If they can fulfill the requirements of the honesty and the integrity and the background, then they will be hired. They will be hired like white people will be hired. And the result is that we have a far higher percentage of Negroes than we had before, but they are not hired. And they were not appointed to their positions because of the fact that they were Negroes. We have a U.S. attorney in Cleveland, a U.S. attorney in San Francisco. Both of them are Negro. But they were entitled, they were hired for those positions because of their ability to get their job done.
Let me touch on another aspect of the situation Mr. Spivak brought up on obedience to law. You were speaking of the responsibilities of the Negro. What do you regard as his responsibility to preserve law and order?
I think he should obey the laws and should live up to law and order.
In Virginia, on Thursday of this week, the president and the executive secretary of the NAACP sent a telegram to Governor Harrison saying that they had every intention to make 1963 a year of full emancipation. Then they said in their wire, "This is to be accomplished non-violently if possible, but violently if necessary." Would you have any comment on that telegram?
I'm against the use of violence, and the president's come out against the use of violence. I'd be strongly against that, those kind of procedures.
Mr. Kaplow.
Mr. Attorney General, a man was arrested in connection with Medgar Evers' murder this morning by the FBI. What besides the matching of the fingerprints do you have on the fellow?
Well, I wouldn't feel free to discuss that matter at the present time. We're working closely with the police department in Jackson and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, of course, continuing their work. But
There is more, though?
There is. Oh. There is more evidence, information than that.
Are you satisfied it's the right man?
Well, I think that those matters should be decided by the court. He was arrested, and the matters then will proceed. But I don't think, as Attorney General, I should make any further comment.
Who is apt to try him first, in a federal court or in a state court?
I had the mayor called and said that we would defer, as that was a more serious crime, the crime of murder, we would defer to the state and to the city.
What did he say?
And that we would cooperate with them.
What did he say?
And, well, we've cooperated all along, and he... expressed appreciation for the offer of cooperation.
This is Mayor Thompson in Jackson?
Yes, that's correct.
He has
made a major effort, I might say, and the Jackson Police Department has made a major effort in connection with this case, and it was the Jackson Police Department that uncovered the fingerprint, and I think that they are very sincere in the efforts that they have brought to bear.
I would just like to jump back again and ask you a sort of a blanket question. What do you think, in general, of the policy of street demonstrations by Negroes?
Well, I think, I think that there have been many injustices that have gone on for a long period of time. And I can see Negroes who attempt to rectify those injustices and find some remedies. And they go to the local authorities, the local merchants, and they're not able to get anywhere. And so the only way in which they can air their injustices and try to obtain remedies is to picket, to have a parade, to have a demonstration. I think this is in the oldest tradition of the United States. So I have great sympathy for that kind of an effort. I think that if it can be solved and resolved around a conference table, it's much better to have it done in that fashion. I think also that demonstrations that are going to lead to violence, I would be strongly against those. Demonstrations, however, that air grievances and try to get obtain remedies for injustices that have existed for a long period of time, I would have great sympathy for that kind of
effect. Well, there have been situations where you have, in effect, asked the Negro leaders to restrain themselves.
That's correct. I think that some of the demonstrations, I don't think you can put them all in any one category. I think some of the demonstrations have been conducted well and in the highest traditions of this country. Other demonstrations, I think, have gotten out of order, and I think that have appealed to violence and would have automatically led to violence. And I would be strongly critical of those. I'm in favor of everyone, whether he's white or Negro, following the orders of the court. And that is not only the federal court, but state courts and local courts. I think we should all follow the orders of the court.
Mr. Poston.
Mr. Attorney General, I know that many people will be happy to know that a suspect has been arrested in the Evers case and been arrested by the FBI. But I have a couple of questions to raise. Last October, when Evers was here in the city, his family was threatened with death at the time. 2 weeks before he was killed, a bomb was thrown at his home. Were any steps taken to protect this man before he was killed?
Of course, we don't have the authority. We're not a national police force. As far as the federal government is concerned, we don't have the authority to go around and provide protection for everybody that happens to be involved in these kind of operations.
Even if it's appealed for?
Well, I'm not aware that it was appealed for as far as Mr. Evers is concerned. It certainly wasn't brought to my attention. But we do not have that kind of authority, nor do we have that kind of manpower. Now, the federal government, the legislative branch of the government might see fit to take that kind of a step, but we do not have the authority at the present time to do that.
Well, on the matter of authority...
That would have to be done by the local authorities.
Well, it comes to another question. Do you think that this arrest by the FBI, and I think, as far as I can recall, it's one of the first arrests of its kind, will allay in any way the apprehension that Negroes have long felt about the role of the FBI in civil rights? The point is that Medgar Evers was just the last, or the latest, of a long list of Negroes who've been assassinated for trying to exercise the same rights for which this arrest was made in this case. I can recall offhand Reverend George Lee, who was shotgunned to death in Belzoni in 1955, and Lamar Smith, who was shot down with 50 witnesses at broad daylight at a Mississippi courthouse, and Harry and Harriet Moore, who were dynamited to death in Mims, Florida on Christmas night. Now, in each of these cases, the FBI went in and made an investigation, but as far as I know, there's never been an arrest before this case by the FBI in one of these cases. Do you think that this may mean that we're going to have a new era of FBI activity in these cases?
Well, I think that the FBI has been extremely, since I've been Attorney General in civil rights matters, the FBI, I think, has made a major contribution, whether it's in voting cases or in cases of violence. Obviously, they haven't solved every case. I think it'd be impossible for them to do so. They have moved in Georgia, where you had the dynamiting, when the Anniston bus case, where the bus was fired upon, and in a number of other cases, they provided very valuable information, which has led to arrests. So I think that their efforts have been most commendable. We are not a national police force. We cannot go in. The Federal Bureau of Investigation cannot go in local matters, but based on their limited jurisdiction, I think they've done an outstanding job.
But you are aware that two federal agencies, the 1947 Truman Commission and the present United States Civil Rights Commission, have pointed up that Negroes are extremely apprehensive because of the close relationship between the FBI and the local police, many of whom are sometimes involved in these cases of civil rights violation. Had you ever considered this problem? Considered that there might be some other protection that you might be able to give to Negroes?
Now, I can only give you what, based on my own personal experience, and my own personal experience and working on these cases for a long period of time, I think that the Federal Bureau of Investigation has done an outstanding job. Now, I know and understand that the Negroes in some areas are apprehensive and feel that they're not getting complete protection. But I just have to base it on my work in this field over the period of the last 2.5 years, and what I've asked the Federal Bureau of Investigation to do in these matters, and I find them vigorous and that they follow through on their responsibilities. So I would hope that that zest and that interest and this effort that this would permeate the Negro community to realize that they do have some support when there is a violation of federal law.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Kennedy, Senator Eastland of Mississippi, who's chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said the other day, and I quote, "Every hamburger stand, every barbershop, every beauty parlor, every rooming house would come under federal control if Title II, the public accommodations part of the civil rights program, is enacted." What's your answer to that?
Well, I'd say that there have been many laws that have been enacted in the past which have controlled the relationship of businesses to the federal government, whether it's going to be the Fair Labor Standards Act, whether it's going to be the laws that require employers to bargain with labor organizations. There are 30 states at the present time that already have laws similar to the ones that we are suggesting, and some of them even more stringent than the ones we are suggesting. And the other point that I would make is that in many of these states, such as Mississippi and other southern states, they have had laws which have controlled businesses, and by saying that the business cannot do business with a Negro. So the idea that we're infringing for the first time in this area, I just don't think makes any sense.
Would you be willing to accept the suggestion made by Senator Aiken, which would exempt small businesses from the provisions of the law?
Well, I'd like to discuss that. I think that the Congress certainly would want to consider that. But until I think that there's a full discussion, I don't think I'd pass on that.
Well,
it's possible that we would accept something along those lines, but I would want to discuss it fully before we did so.
Is the president going to put all of his effort behind this civil rights program?
Well, I think he's made it quite clear in the past that he's going to, and it's we are committed to this. And we're going to see that this legislation is passed, and we're going to stay, do all that we can in the executive branch of the government to have it passed. We are committed to it fully and completely, and there is no turning back on it.
How do you praise your chances?
I'm optimistic and hopeful, and I'm not sure it's in that order. But I am hopeful that some legislation will be passed, and the legislation along the lines that have been suggested by the president.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
Mr. Kennedy, from time to time, sir, the Supreme Court has spoken of the citizen's right to freedom of association. In terms of this racial context we've been discussing, do you believe that such a right of freedom of association exists, and to what extent would the Department of Justice defend its exercise by white persons?
I think there is. I believe in freedom of association.
Do you believe that's compatible then, sir, with Title II of your bill?
Yes, I do. I think I'd be glad to explain that if you'd like.
Yes, sir. I was going to ask another constitutional question in a minute going to Title II. But I wanted to quote to you Mr. Justice Harlan's comment in the sit-in case dissent that he wrote, where he said, "Freedom of the individual to choose his associates or his neighbors, to use and dispose of his property as he sees fit, to be irrational, arbitrary, capricious, even unjust in his personal relations are things all entitled to a large measure of protection from governmental interference." Do you agree with Mr. Justice Harlan?
Well, I agree with the majority decision in that case. I think that if a business is opening itself up to the general public, that it should do just that, and should not discriminate against a person, refuse to serve a person just because he happens to be a Negro. I think that this is basic here in the United States at the present time, and I think that this situation has not been rectified by local authorities in states or in local communities in some parts of the United States. I think, therefore, it's required that the federal government take some action in this field. I think it would be much better if the local authorities moved in this difficult field, but they have not seen fit to do so in a number of states, in a number of areas, and so I think it's required that the federal government, but all that is, the federal government, the legislative branch of the government, have taken steps in the field, in this general area, for many years. And I think that when a business opens its doors to the general public, it should open it to Negro and white alike. Now, it might decide that it doesn't want to serve a Negro because he doesn't have a tie on, it doesn't like the way that he looks, or some other reason, but it shouldn't be just because he happens to have a different color skin than the rest of the people.
Gentlemen, we have about 2.5 minutes. Mr. Kaplow.
Mr. Attorney General, what sort of a political effect do you think all of this is having, and more importantly, is going to have?
Well, I think any time that you get into a controversy, in a deep and bitter controversy, such as this is, and where there is a large percentage of people in a section of the United States which are opposed to the actions that are being taken by the government, that the president's going to lose popularity and the administration will lose popularity.
Have you been taking any particular soundings, you or somebody in your administration?
No, we have not. But I've heard of other soundings that have been taken, which indicates that we're losing, that the president's lost a good deal of his popularity because of this effort.
Can you look ahead a year or a year and how many months, a few months?
Well, I think that President Kennedy be reelected as president.
Mr. Poston.
The president made an excellent defense, both in his address to the nation and also his message to Congress, of this public accommodation section of the bill. But a lot of people are disturbed that while the majority leader of your party, of your administration, Mr. Mansfield, introduced the president's package, he also joined with Mr. Dirksen, who's opposed to this public accommodation section, and introduced a package that did not include it. Is there any indication in that that the administration might be satisfied with less than the full package, including the public accommodation?
No, there is not. But obviously, in order to obtain the passage of this bill, we're going to have some Republican support. I think that's quite clear. And the reason that was done was to make sure it was understood that there was some Republican support for some of the bill. But we think that the public accommodations section of the bill is absolutely essential. The reason that you have the demonstrations, the parades, and the disorders at the present time are based on the fact that Negroes are insulted daily by the fact that they cannot go into a store and sit at a lunch counter, or they cannot go to a motel or a hotel. They can't, if they travel throughout a number of the states of the South, they have to look it all up beforehand to make sure that they know where they can or cannot stay. We want this situation rectified.
Then
we think that these are injustices, that our citizens, or Negro citizens, are being treated as second-class people, and that something needs to be done about it.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Mr. Attorney General, for being with us.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview.
This is Gene Rayburn, one of your hosts on Weekend Monitor. One of Monitor's recent guests was this well-known entertainer.
I think I have a lot more serenity, which simply comes with time and age and happiness. It's simply good things happen to me.
The girl with the big voice, Judy Garland. Just one of the people from show business you meet weekends on Monitor. But Monitor features people from all walks of life. Let Monitor guide you to better listening on NBC Radio.
Here's today's health tip from the American Medical Association. How do you stop a nosebleed? Almost everyone has his own pet remedy. Some people, particularly children, have frequent nosebleeds, even though they have no serious disease. Small blood vessels under the delicate nasal lining rupture easily. Loss of blood usually is less than you think, and this loss usually isn't serious. Have the victim sit up, unless he is faint. This slows the flow of blood to the head. Apply large, cold, wet towels over the face, the nose, and back of the head and neck. Keep the victim quiet. If bleeding is severe or prolonged, call a physician. A blow can cause nosebleed, as can high altitudes, certain diseases, or high blood pressure. If someone in your family has frequent nosebleeds, check with your doctor. It could be a symptom of an ailment that can be treated or corrected. Now, more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was Robert F. Kennedy, Attorney General of the United States. The panel consisted of Lawrence E. Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Ted Poston of the New York Post, James Kilpatrick of the Richmond, Virginia News Leader, and Herbert Kaplow of NBC News. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped, self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press. The guest will be Senator Thruston B. Morton of Kentucky. This program was pre-recorded. President Kennedy's live news conference from Bonn, Germany, tomorrow on NBC Radio.